Why do we have the feedback? Let me play with it 1 second. You're recording already?
Yeah,
that's not recording. Okay, so it's okay. I just want to.
Okay.
Start
over?
No, it's okay. Today is November 11th, 11/11/12, a very fortuitous date. And it's Sunday afternoon, and we've had our first real winter day today. And I'm very glad I didn't wash my car on Friday. That's all I can say. I was so tempted to, because I was teaching a few weeks ago when there were drops of rain, when there was a sandstorm, and, you know, it was a Chil Hashem already, what the car looked like. And now I looked at the car. Wow, everything is washed away. Beautiful. Saved myself a place, 20, 30 shekel. Okay, Baruch Hashem. I want to say hello to all the students in front of me and to all those listening across the world. Let me just review briefly. We're heading into a major, major share today. Let me just review briefly. We dealt with the rush last week, and there's no question that Dini Mamona, we're dealing with Minhag. Have you filled your wife in the background so she can pick up? We're dealing with Minhag and how much power Minhag has. And there's no question that in Dini Mamona you have Hefka, Beit, and Hefka, and therefore Minhag can rule the roost, to put it mildly. We also saw an interesting tshuva from the Rashbash, and this is the end of the Rishonic period. And the point is made that if you allow an Isav HaHeta Minhag to be a Koveya, you wind up having no Yiddishkeit left. And what's amazing about that Shiva, it's a description of what happened with the conservative movement, because Solomon Schechter introduced the concept of Catholic Israel. And I want to correct myself. Jack Levenstein told me, I said it's a Latin word, Catholic. It's a Greek word. And I was told when I heard the word the first time, I think in graduate school, the professor said Latin. So I went to Webster's on a bridge, then I have to say Jack is right, it's of Greek origins, but it could be that it crept into the Latin language as well, and therefore the Catholic Church refers to itself as the Catholic Church. It means the universal church. The Catholic Church views itself as the real church that's all over the universe. I think the last elections in America have very rapidly disproven the fact that the Catholic Church has any power today. And I understand that every state where same-sex marriage was on the ballot, it was approved by a hearty majority. So lo aleinu, the Catholic Church Lichtendred, and some of the Eastern Seaboard Lichtendred. Anyway, the word Catholic means, as Solomon Schechter understood it, the universal Jewish people have, I would say, it's like a Supreme Court. They can accept or not accept, the people decide, and ultimately, although Solomon Schechter explained it at length last week, I'm positive that he didn't think in terms of what would ultimately happen. He meant, all right, the mechitza in the synagogue, if the women insist there should be no mechitza, so let the women decide. He didn't see beyond that. I don't believe in a million years he dreamt they would drive the shul on Shabbat or eat in a treif restaurant, order fish in a treif restaurant, or do away with tarat mishpacha lo aleinu. But we see what happened with the conservative movement and the Rashbash. You read a tshuva from the 1400s, you might believe that it was written 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And then we saw a famous psak of the Rambam dealing with Yom Kippur, and we got involved with the whole minhag of going to mikveh every day. Those of you that are chassidim, I don't think there's anyone in the class who is a chassid, but I wonder, do we have any students here who go to mikveh every day? I mean, this is part of chassidus, like they put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin there. I mean, I'm a Litvak, so on one hand, I want to laugh at it. On the other hand, I'm a good Jew, and I'm very moved by such devotion. So what about Yom Kippur? So a Talmud, so I showed you, the Rambam says absolutely forbidden to go to mikveh on Yom Kippur. It's a famous Rambam. He says minug can knock out that which is permissible. You can have a minug not to eat gelatin, but you can't permit that which is forbidden. So I want you to know, in my mind, I know that a hetta floated around in the Hasidic world, and a Talmud of mine, Dr. Alan Blau, tells me he saw a tshuva from the Debet Srina Rav, written years ago, but written, I believe, in America, the Debet Srina Rav. He was right near Yeshiva University at first. He was, until his death. I still remember the funeral. It's the first time in my life I saw thousands upon thousands of black clothes. I mean, in my days, no one in YU wore black clothes. Only a big, famous Rosh Yeshiva, Gaon Tzadik, Reb David Lifshitz, the Mashgiach, the Rav, dressed like one of the boys. What can I tell you? There's a famous story in Boston when the Rav learned to drive. So he had an accident, and the Balabatim came to him and said, Rebbe, two things we have to complain about. One, the Rav cannot drive. Driving is for people who don't think about a Rambam when they're driving. And the second thing is, we don't like the hats. It's not the Rav wore, you know, sport hats. It's not mechubadik, you know, during the week, all right, but still, you're the Rav, you're the greatest Jew living in the Boston area. So the Rav said, when it comes to driving, I will give in to you. When it comes to the hat I wear, did you ever see pictures of Reb Chaim? He didn't dress like a Rav, and the hat he didn't change. But Baruch Hashem, the car he did not drive, the Rebbetzin used to drive. I still have the image of the Dodge. It was a 1949 Dodge, a black Dodge, as I recall. And the Rebbetzin, for a period, she drove him from Boston with him, and they stayed at his mother across the street. Then later he flew. She remained behind in Boston. Occasionally she came in with him. It was quite an experience to see the warmth and depth of their relationship. Anyway, one second, where was I? So at the Debet Sina's funeral, I must have been in high school. You can check out the years. It had the Stern, Rabbi Stern, I believe. It must have been in the mid-50s, perhaps, early 50s. Maybe I was in college. I remember it was four blocks from the yeshiva on Amsterdam Avenue in that area. And wow, what a crowd of people dressed in black. I never saw that before. Everyone came from Brooklyn, poet out of Williamsburg. Borough Park was starting to become Borough Park. Flatbush was still far from a Torah center. But my Talmud tells me that the Debet Srina was takamatir, going to mikvah on Yom Kippur. And he deals with the Rambam I quoted. No, all I can tell you is the Vilna Gaon was right. Okay? That's all I can tell you. The Vilna Gaon was right. He put the Chassidim into Chayrim. There are many reasons why he put them into Chayrim. You can add this to the list. But what can we do? The Chassidim defeated the Vilna Gaon, defeated every last vestige of Lithuanian life. When you see Rakefin and get to know him, you have to make a bracha that you saw a dinosaur. You follow me? It's, I don't know what bracha you have to make, whether it's Ro'e Yam HaGadol, Olsen and Nisim B'makom Hazeh, or whether it's a Shechiyanu, whether it's Mishana HaBriyat, or maybe a Shechiyanu that you're zeichet to see, a walking dinosaur. So Rakefid, I yet knew the Rav intimately, I knew Rav Baron Cutler intimately, I knew Rav Moshe Feinstein. All right, I knew what Lithuania was about. But how you can justify a tshuva going to mikveh on Yom Kippur, it's beyond my comprehension. But this is the Hasidic world, and just as they daven 9:30 Shabbos morning, and if you can't say a bad word, because they own the world today. The Torah world is in their hands. So I want to thank my student, Dr. Blau. I'm aware that there was das habich gehet. I knew that there was something floating around. And nevertheless, I have to stand on what the Rambam says, not on what the Debet Srina paskind. Okay, and then we finally saw last week, we saw the Ritba when the Gedolei HaRishonim, And there he's simply giving us seichel that all of us need. If we go into the rabbinate, you can't force balabatim. And if there's a minig, and I gave you a fabulous example, and here you tell me in London that they don't duchen when Yonta falls on Shabbos. And tell me, check with Sam. Who talks to Sam? We have one Talmud here from, we have one Talmud from London. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
One, okay. Do me a favor, Moshe. Check with him if this is true that they don't duchen in London. But I told you the whole story with the Rav and the Hamak Leiket. I don't know whether I think I may have written the story up. I don't even know. Did I write it up? Didn't I write it up? I mean, I've spoken about it so many times. I know Rav Heschel wrote it up in one of his volumes. But we heard it from the Rav a number of times. It left a deep scar on him. Imagine you come to Boston and they tell you, Rabbi Soloveitchik, don't come back to the shul again. Okay? It's his first face Pesach in Boston. And they tell him, don't come back to the shul. We don't want to see you in here. And when you want to change a minhag, you got to go slowly. You have to educate. You can do it, but it has to be betuv tam vadat. And you don't have to quote the Rav. It's the Ritba. I showed it to you last week. Okay, now I want to go further. And I want to finish up the point I'm making. And then I want to totally decimate every word I've said until now and send everyone into orbit. Now, my dear Talmud, Dr. Alan Blau, and this Alan Blau is a very interesting individual. He has a PhD in psychology, and his father was a Talmud Mufak of the Rav. Alan is my Talmud, and he's a Talmud Chacham, and he works for Satmar. So he covers many different areas in his life. So he sent me an email that he found in the Meiri's Magen Avot, Ha'inyan Ha'yud Aleph, the same thought we're developing in class. So I try to get the Magen Avot, and it's not in our library, and I have to thank Daniel Abraham first. I have to thank my student, David Katz, for teaching me what a computer is about. So I start to understand what you can get out of a computer. So I asked Daniel to go to the Bar Ilan, what do you call it, diskette, whatever you call it, and see whether you can come up with what I'm looking for. And sure enough, Daniel came up with it. So I'm quoting from the Sefer Magen Avot, the Meiri Sefer, and I'm quoting from exactly the source he gave, Inyan Hayur Aleph. It's exactly the source. It's towards the end, the quote that I'm quoting. But what the Meiri is dealing with here is Rabbeinu Tamshit. I give you a simple example. In Young Israel of Hillcrest, during the summer, every day there is a plag, mincha, and marav. No, are you allowed to do that? They're makpid. It's not like the Germans who daven mincha and marav earlier, irrespective of when the plag was. It was always, for the sake of argument, I think you still see that at Kehilat Jeshurun, irrespective of when the plag is, mincha and marav is at a certain time. So you come into the Young Israel, and during the summer, for me it's fabulous, because if I have to go to Brooklyn, if I have to drive to Brooklyn, I don't want to drive with pressure, when am I going to catch marav? So I catch the plag, and they're very makpid on zman, mincha, they finish. If it's not the plug yet, so someone will say Divrei Torah for a minute or two, and then they daven marav. No, are you yotzei? According to Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbi Yehuda, if you've learned the sugyer in Brachat in Rabbi Yehuda, not only are you yotzei, you should do it this way. And Rabbeinu Tam was very angry that people waited until dark to daven marav, and that's based upon the Gemara also in the first parak in Brachat. And it's human nature. You come home, you're tired. You're tired, you delay eating. You delay eating, you wait to eat. You know, I got a daven, and before you know it, you eat, you're tired, I'll daven later, you go to sleep, and boom, you wake up, and it's already the morning, and you haven't daven marav. So Rabbeinu Tam yells and shouts out of those people that are not Samach and Rabbi Yehuda, and don't daven mincha before the plag, and marav after the plag, and he holds your yotzei kriyat shema, and you can eat, and he gives them hell. He quotes the Gemara in Bracha Taftalat Amid Bet Shelo Yama Adam Ochel Kima VeIshan Kima, and before you know it, the night is over. And he says, how can you not be samachan Rabbeinu Tam? And listen to these words. Minhag avot Torah hi b'chol sheha halachat halacha rofefet. B'chol sheha halacha rofefet. It should be, it says rafafot, but it should be, if halacha is singular, should be singular. V'ra'ayot yesh. Now what he's saying is, there are people who daven mincha early, daven mariv early. We can bring many proofs that they're correct. And we can bring many proofs that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And we can bring many proofs that you yotzei kriyat shema. And he says, this is what we should do. Follow that minhag and not play chumrah, waiting for darkness, if we will forget about davening. All right, now, I don't know, again, I just want to say, halacha lemaisa, I don't know whether this is totally applicable. Well, David, why am I saying that? For a simple reason. In the days of Chazal, when you went to sleep, you woke up with daybreak. So you didn't get a good night's sleep if you waited till later. You got tired, you went to sleep before you know it, daybreak. Today, Baruch Hashem, we go to sleep, we pull the blinds down. In Israel, every house has to have shades that seal because of the war in case we have to block out. All right, it shouldn't happen again, but I'm living here 44 years. Today happens to be a particularly difficult day for us. And I have to say, thank God we have an army. We should make a mishaberech v'tzahal b'lev v'nefesh, not just Shabbos, but every day. And the army is fighting up north and down south today. It's not so simple. We shot a missile into Syria on purpose. And down south, it's mamish war. So thank God, and we're sitting here, we're learning b'menuchat ha'nefesh. But today, you go to sleep. You can wake up at 8 o'clock. Right here, they made the minyan a 7:45. I can't believe a yeshiva daven so late. Where I come from, I don't know. I learned in Volozhin, and I still remember when the Netziv knocked on Reb Chaim's door at 5 a.m. to tell him a teretz or to a difficult Rambam, et got a teretz v'ashver Rambam, and Reb Chaim Brisko was still asleep. The Netziv was hysterical. They said you're going to be the next Gadol Hadar, and you're asleep at 5 a.m. in the morning, you're not learning. But you see, today we can go to sleep at 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, get a good night's sleep. So today we are makpid to daven properly, and even when I daven with the plug, I always say Shema over again at night to be yotzei according to all the shitot, which is zil kriya b'rapo, it's axiomatic. I can only tell you, the first shaila I ever asked the Rav, Michael, this is fascinating, a high school kid, you have chutzpah. You see, the older you get, you have yirat hakavod, you respect greatness. But a kid doesn't know anything. I was a high school kid, and I called the Rebbe in Pesha Soloveitchik. I knew the Rav was there. I called to talk with the Rav, a high school kid. I don't know where I got the nerve. I don't know. I wouldn't today. I have chutzpah, but that's because I have 11,000 students standing behind me. And if I count over the internet, the number increases to Yankee Stadium proportions. So today I have chutzpah. But imagine a high school kid calls the Rav. You know what my shaila was? I said, Rav Soloveitchik, I'm a student in Talmudical Academy. And you know, I get home, the Bronx, by the time I get home, I'm very hungry. Can I eat before I daven and leave a note to daven? You know what I'm talking about? The halakha is, if you're going to eat before you daven, you have to tell someone to remind you to daven. So I don't know, who am I going to tell? So, but I leave a note, Mariv. Then the Rav says, as long as you'll remember to look at the note, I believe it will be okay. That was the first shaila I asked the Rav. So here is very fascinating, the words of the Meiri, that where the halachas rofefet and their various minhagim, but this minhag makes sense. I can bring proofs to it, follow it. And he's very adamant. You have to see his language. He's very adamant. Okay. Then I want to go a step further and introduce you to another sefer. And this takes us back to something I said last week as well, and I had a whole discussion with my grandson over Shabbos. You have very grandchildren, everyone is varied. Everyone has different, the Gemara in Bracha, at the end of Bracha, Kishem Shapatsu Taimen on the Mud, Taimen on the Mud. But this particular grandson is very, very adin. I don't know how to say that in English. Very sensitive. And we were discussing the Dina de Malchut, the dinner, and how it applies in Israel. And I was explaining to him the concept that a law has to be equitable. That if you, and I said, one of the problems with the draft exemption is that it's not an equitable law. If this kid goes to yeshiva, says, I don't go into the army. A kid told me at the Kotel, a kid I know from the time he was born, I am in Tzva Hashem. All right, I don't know. I went into the army. I thought I was in Tzva Hashem when I went into the army. When they gave me my uniform, when I went into basic training, I made it Shechianu. I was the first Rothkopf after 2,000 years of exile, privileged to wear the uniform Ashrenu Shezachinu, the Tzva Haganah Yisrael. So I made it Shechianu B'Shem U'Malchut. And the little pkida, the girl, a soldier, the little girl there, I don't know if she knew what was going on, it was a different Israel then, a different army, Kanayin Hara, what we have today. So, the law of the land has to be equitable. Now, then you can go a little further. What about taxes? And this I don't have to tell you. Look into my article, Dinan Malchut Dinan, is the I've never written another article that has been reprinted in so many different formats and other books and journals and I don't want to go into details. It's not important now. But that article, Dinan Malchut Dinan, caught on. So I deal with the problems of take the communist system. Can you say Dinan Malchut Dinan? This was the famous Shaila of Moshe Soloveitchik got. The communists take over, and the first thing they do, for the sake of argument, Chesky owns a big factory that makes chariots, not cars yet, but chariots driven by horses. Chariots, maybe that's too strong a word. Fancy, what word would you use? Wagons, coaches driven by horses. It's a true story. So now the communists took over and nationalized all the property. Now they're selling off the stock. So you can buy a coach for the equivalent of 100 ruble instead of 1,000 ruble. They just want to get rid of it, and whatever they're going to do with the factory, the communists are taking it over. No, they came to Reb Moshe, can I buy a coach for 100 ruble, but this coach was stolen. It belonged to a factory. They robbed it. So they asked Reb Moshe, Dinah de Malchuta Dinah. So Reb Moshe said, Dina de Malchuta, not Chamsana de Malchuta. But when the government engages in Hamas, in something so illegal, so corrupt, that is not law of the land. And this is a basic principle. You can look it up in my article, get all the sources. There's no question that the tax structure has to be equitable. Imagine if in the state of Israel there'd be a tax structure that would say, if you're Jewish, and you're making 20,000 shekel a month, you pay 20%. If you're an Arab citizen, you pay 40%. You follow me? If you're an Ethiopian and your skin is black, you pay 30%. That's not Dinah de Malchutza, that's Chamsana de Malchutza. It's not equal, it's not equitable, it's not democratic. So what's fascinating is you see this in the Nachlat Shiva. Now, anyone, first of all, do you recognize the Nachlat Shiva? Do you recognize the name? Does your generation use it? Rav Shmuel Rav David Halevi. This was a very famous sefer from Germany at the dawn of the Enlightenment. It's a little bit before the Enlightenment. I would imagine that he wrote the sefer at the end of the 1600s, right before the Enlightenment. Why was that sefer so important? Anyone use it? You don't use it today? Shtarat. It has every type of shtar in the sefer, every type of ketuvah, every type of get, every type of shtar that you would need for chayshin mishpat. It's a fabulous, important sefer. Of course, many of the shtarot we don't use today, and we've gone long beyond the nusach of the ketuvah at that time. But nevertheless, the Nachlat Shiva, when I was studying for smicha, it was a sefer that we all occasionally refer to. Now, if you go to page Ayin Bet Amid Aleph, in the edition that puts in English, Latin, am I right? Roman numbers, or what word should I use? 143, in regular numbers, the way we write numbers, not the fancy writing, 143. What do you call those numbers? Latin numbers? Michael, help me out, you're a mathematician. In Arabic, I don't... Roman numerals, what's the word? Anyway, I mean pagination the way we do it, 143. So here he talks about minhag and taxes. And you can see the problems. Afim chadashim ikarev bo, he says. Newcomers come to the community. They're rough, they're tough, they're arrogant. And they have friends whom they give tax breaks, and other Jews whom they take more than they should. He says, chas v'chalila, this is not minhag. And he says, such people, the rabbis have to slap them down, and you have to be very firm, because they what they are doing is not within the realm of minhag. A minhag has to be equitable. A minhag has to be introduced by decent individuals. But if ruffians, highwaymen, come along, this is not minhag. This is protection money. No, protection money, legal or not legal. Blackmail, legal or not legal. Chas v'chalila. And these are real problems. By the way, in modern-day Israel, this is one of the real crimes that constantly come up. You go to Shvakim, in not in Yerushalayim, and I hope not in Tel Aviv, but in smaller cities, you have families who want protection money. There are constantly arrests, time after time. Politicians, I need not tell you, what is bribery? Imagine someone gets ahead because he bribes a politician. You see, and what are you going to say? Minhag hamakom? You understand? I've heard people say, what are you getting so upset with Derry? Derry comes from the Mela, from the ghetto in Morocco. In the ghetto, bakshish was a way of life. I've heard people talk like this. So I tell them, but this is Israel today. If you're going to run an economy and you're going to run politicians and you're going to have bakshish and you're going to have people paid off and you're going to say minhag hamakom, it becomes Sodom and Gomorrah. Right or wrong? Sodom and Gomorrah, they were tzaddikim. You know the way the Gemara describes them in Sanhedrin. But they were makpid in every law. They had a law that there was one bed for a wayfarer. If he was too short, they stretched him. If he was too long, they knocked him down. He should fit into the bed. All right, that's the end of the world. That's that you can't say minhag hamakom. And the Nachlat Shiva is very powerful. What's fascinating is it's written on the dawn of the Enlightenment. And it would require research to know whether this was a universal problem already, whether the old type of Jewish community in Germany or Franco-Germany was falling apart, what was happening as we went in to the dawn of the 18th century, the 1800s. Okay, so what have I said until now? We're about to hit a crescendo. What have I said until now? We've spoken for months already on minhag. And we've said, ultimately, Jewish life depends upon minhag. Wherever there's a machloket, wherever we're not certain, no one can say it better than the Gemara. Go and see the way people observe. Fuk hazi mai amat devat. The Gemara, bracha daf mem hei amar alef. Four times in Shas. More than that, the sugi in Pesachim, Daf Samech Vav, and I showed you the Tosefta, Jews have Ruach HaKodesh. Im lo neviyim heim, b'nei neviyim heim. Wow. What a compliment. we're B'nai Nevi'im, yes, an observant Jew, a learned Jew, part of being a Jew, we know how to live as Jews. It may have to do with the Gemara in Nida, that the embryo, the Malach, teaches him Kol HaTorah Kula, right or wrong, then when you're about to be born, give you that little indentation, the cleft, you forget it all. Dude, the Rav asked, why do you have to learn everything? Because it shows a Jew can observe the entire Torah. It's inborn, it's within him. It's part of his psychic makeup. And when we observe, when we live, we can be Nevi'im, B'nai Nevi'im, and you want to see how a Jew lives. And I gave many shirim on this. This is why we need a Torah Shabbat path. You can ask a very simple question. Why do you need a Torah Shabbat path? You know, if you know Shas, you know how much we forgot the Gemara and Tamura. B'nei Evlo, Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, thousands of halachot were forgotten. What do you mean? Why a Torah Shabbat path? We were makpid, and you had to learn for 40 years with the Rebbe, and even when they wrote down the Torah Shabbat path, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samer, Keit Lasot Lashem, Keit Peret Torah Techa, they wrote it down finally, they wrote it down in such an esoteric way that there's no way you can master Shas and Peskin without a Rebbe. A Rebbe has to get you started. Now why? Why? Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us 30 books of Torah Moshe and everything spelled out? And the most basic answer is because Torah is a way of life. Etz Chaim Hi L'Machzikim Bo. D'Racher Darchei Noam. You have to see the way a Rebbe laughs, the way a Rebbe cries, the way a Rebbe lives, the way a Rebbe treats his wife. This is the way a Rebbe observes Shabbat, the way a Rebbe davens. This is Torah Chaim Hi. If you don't have that interconnection, you're lost. And you see what happened. God have mercy and all the assimilation in the world when there was no Rebbe, when there was no interconnection, when there was no Torah Shabbat Peh, when there was no Pleitat Sofrim. I don't have to tell you my feelings about the Rav's Hesped for Reb Chaim Heller. I am convinced the Rav reaches the absolute apex of his Dashanut, philosophy, theology, homiletics, call it what you wish, the absolute apex. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein feels the Hesped for the Brisker Rav, which was given within a few weeks apart, he feels that's the apex. But I say the Hesped and the Brisker Rav, it was unbelievable. I still remember Reb Yeruchim Gerelik dancing after the Hesped, what the Rav said, he knew the Brisker Rav, and he couldn't get over what the Rav did that night. But that's limited to Brisk. Pleitat Sofreihem, the Hesped of Reb Chaim Heller, was Torah Hashem Tamima in the full sense of the word. So that Minhag wins out. Okay? And this has so many halachic implications, as we have seen. All the way down to the bracha we make before we drink water and the bracha we make afterwards is a result of what they were doing out on the streets of Yerushalayim and Teferia, etc. Beautiful. Beautiful. Everything I said, Daniel, may have no applicability in the year 2013. And here I want to introduce you to one of the great, I'll call it a monograph. If you don't know this monograph by heart, you cannot breathe air. But let me begin by telling you a little story. The 1990s, I was walking next to a Baron Soloveitchik. He was in a wheelchair, right? You know that. He had a stroke. He lasted 19 years of his life. He functioned with superhuman ability. What the stroke is attributed to, one day you'll be good young rabbis, you can come in my office, I'll tell you privately what the family blames it on. I don't want to say it publicly because you can't prove it. But it's a sad story. I knew Reb Aaron when he was a youngster without a beard yet. Met him in 51. He lived across the street from the yeshiva. Taught in Chaim Berlin at the time. Big trip out to Brooklyn. It was a big, big trip. It's before Chaim Berlin was in Flatbush. I think they were in Bronzeville. It was a big trip. So I'm walking with the Reb Aaron, and we're discussing the uniqueness of the Rav and his only son, my classmate, who you know as Dr. Grach. That's the term the boys tell me they use for Reb Chaim. I call him Reb Chaim, my classmate. You call him Dr. Gon Reb Chaim. Okay. So Reb Aaron says to me, What was unique about my brother? Anything he touched, he was Mechadesh. And that's true. The Rav, you see, Reb Moshe Feinstein's greatness was as a posek. As a Rosh Yeshiva, he didn't come to the greatness he had as a posek. As a darshan, he did. All right, but as a posek, he was the Yigrat Moshe, was Reb Moshe Feinstein, the posek of the generation. Reb Aaron Kotler was a Rosh Yeshiva. He had a 7-year cycle of Sheyurim. It's a sad story. Because when he reaches America, he never has time l'chadesh again. He has to raise money, and the American years are spent chasing donors to build Lakewood against all odds. He achieved. But today, I trust that in Lakewood, there are Balabatim who raised the money, and the Rosh Yeshivas can be Mechadesh. But Reb Aaron would continue in America his 7-year cycle of what he developed in Kletz. Fine. The Rav was amazing because whatever he touched as a Rosh Yeshiva, no one equaled him. Koach HaHesbe. Wow. As a darshan, you can't even, we used to say there are three great speakers in the world. Churchill, who else did we come? Abba Ibn and the Rav. Three great speakers. And believe me, the Rav was better and greater and more profound and more innovative than Churchill and Abba Ibn put together. But Abba Ibn, you know, do you recognize the name? He was a South African, Audrey Ibn. Agoy Gama didn't observe anything. His wife's sister was a Shomeret Shabbos until today. It's amazing what happens in one family. But he was, Abba Ibn spoke at the UN. Even the Sonei Yisrael had to listen to his English, his command of speech. Pick up some records of him, some diskettes perhaps. Churchill. Oh. The Rav. Wow. Jewish philosophy. No. Outside of Rav Kook, there are just two names you can mention for the 20th century, Rav Kook and the Rav. Chumash, Ramban, whatever he touched. And then Reb Aaron says to me, and tell me, and Chaim is not like his father, whatever he touches, he is innovative. And Chaim is a gon adir. There is no one raised in America that achieved his level. No other Gadol b'Yisrael raised a son that knows as much as Reb Chaim. But it's more than that. He goes into Chochmat Yisrael, gets a PhD, Hebrew University. Look at his volume that came out a year and a half ago, 2 years already, Yenam. If I can quote Rakefet to you, I told Chaim that this is now the gold standard of Chochmat Yisrael. No one, but no one from Leopold Sunz until today has come out on such a level. What a volume. It's an absolute synthesis of traditional learning, Shasim Paiskim, Rishonim, Rashi Tosfot, inside out, and scientific scholarship. All right. We never knew, and this is what Reb Aaron and I were talking about, Reb Aaron Soloveitchik and your humble servant, who could believe that Chaim, what a political scientist, what a sociologist. And his article, In Tradition, I think it's like a 98-page article, is second to none. It has to be studied and every footnote evaluated and looked into. Tradition, put out by Rabbinical Council of America, 28th year, the fourth issue that year, 1994. It's almost 20 years ago already. Rupture and Reconstruction, the transformation of contemporary orthodoxy. You're familiar with the article? Moshe, yes. Chesky? Do you know how to breathe? Chesky, familiar? How do you know how to breathe there? Nathaniel? You're fishing for it. Okay. Gentlemen, it's really something. But let me pull what I need out of the article. I remember at that time Rabbi Adam Mintz was the assistant rabbi, the associate rabbi in Kehilat Yeshurun. You know Rabbi Mintz, right? Afterwards, he was in Lincoln Square. Now he has his own shul. He's teaching, I think. He's a professor at Rutgers. He's got a PhD. We're going to talk about him in great length, if not this year, next year. Be'ezrat Hashem, he just did a PhD at NYU on Erev, on the Erevan controversies in the United States. It's a fabulous PhD. So he's a big Talmud Chacham, Adam. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He's a real centrist. He's at times a little left of center, but he bounces back. He's a real Talmud Chacham. So Adam got up that Shabbos in KY. I got endless calls, and he pronounced in front of the elegant audience there, "We have the new Gadol Hadar, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik." And it was well said. And this article, you see, what is Jewish life based upon? I just told you. You watch your Rebbe. You watch the Minhag. You watch the lifestyle, the breath, the heartbeat of the way Jews live. That's how we know how to be Jews. Along came modernity. You know what modernity means? How many goyim there are in the world today with Jewish blood. My wife gave me a book to read. No, your wife gives you a book to read, you have to read it. You have to be mechabed your wife. You have to discuss it with her. All right, I don't say I hover over it, but when my eyes are tired, I read. I just finished the book today. On the Ephrati family, Ephrusi. They were once as wealthy as Rothschild. I told my wife, why do you give me such books to aggravate me? Totally assimilated. The guy writing the book, his father's a priest, some Anglican minister, London. Diwal, I think the name is. I think he may yet be, no, I don't know if he lives as a Jew or not. He at least doesn't seem to be a non-Jew. But what happened to the family? A from family. A family with commitment. The modern world. Kissinger. Do I have to go any further? Who is Henry Kissinger's father? Gabay of the Hershian minion of Breuers in Washington Heights. His mother wore a shekel. His mother wore a shekel. I'm not telling you fairy tales. Eyewitnesses. Kissinger. In his youth, he wrote an essay on Mitzvat Yishev Eretz Yisrael. Menachem Parrish gave him a copy, or gave him the essay when he came here in the Yom Kippur War, when he was Secretary of State. They had a copy in the Aguda archives. It was written for Tziri Agudat Yisrael in his hometown in Germany. No, he marries Nancy on Shabbos. Divorces his Jewish wife, right or wrong, Nancy. If you're going to marry a goy, let me not spell it out. you don't know Yiddish. So we need chazer from the mile. Those who know Yiddish will enjoy what I just said. What a miyuskite. Oh my God. What he threw away his Yiddishkeit for on Shabbos. Nancy. It's the modern world. Lost. When I grew up, how many from Jews were there? We kids, what we had a fight, if we made a commitment to be Shomer Shabbos, to learn Torah, you have no idea. Some of you kids grew up in from homes. You don't realize what the generation that I was raised in, and I'm not a Baal Tshuva, don't misunderstand me. I once gave a whole Shia. I have certain advantages of a Baal Tshuva. I have the advantage that my parents could never tell me what to do. I had total freedom of choice. That's a big advantage. I am what I am because I choose to be what I am. And everything I think, I have a 1,000 hours of proofs for every word that leaves my mouth. But if I say it all, I'll never teach. There's a total breakdown. We're living in a fabulous world today. This Friday night, I'm speaking in Chicago at the synagogue's dinner. They asked me to speak on the Baal Tshuva movement. No problem. I have a halavai. I should be able to give one half of what I prepared. If you have it, oh, it's in my suitcase already. Whole page of notes. Tshuva movement. No, but look what's happened. Whoever asked the question 100 years ago, how much matzah do we have to eat to be yotzei the chiyuv, the oraita of having matzah at the Leil HaSeder? Whoever asked the question? It's Chaim speaking, page 68, 69. It's genius. Whoever asked the question? You sat at a Seder, you looked at your father. You looked at your grandfather. You looked at your older brother. And you ate as much matzah as they ate. A hand matzah, half a hand. A third of a hand matzah, half a machine matzah. There's no shaila. Today, you know how many volumes have been written with shayurim, with pictures. I've already seen napkins that you're supposed to put the matzah down. It's a, to me, it's an issur d'rabbanan. You're measuring something on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. If you want the story, Moshe, the story doesn't go for nothing. $36,000 to the IOU list. Willing? Thank you. He honors the Rebbe. Write it down. Danny, wherever you are, write it down.
Bones?
I'll tell you a story with which the bones are in. Yeah, yeah, I understand. But I want to tell you a story that's not in here. This story is not in here. But Jerusalem was shaking. Those of you that have read, I called the Lichtens, I left a message because I had to bring regards from someone I met in New York, and I had asked Tovah something. But anyway, so this person, I write about him in my book. He was the greatest matpid, the greatest mind in the yeshiva when I came in 51. He was Gershon Sadowski. He and Rabarin, the Gersh, the Babe, these were the limelights of the yeshiva. I write about it. So I meet him in Borough Park at a 1:40 early Mincha Minyan in a shtibble. Meet him out of nowhere. He comes over to me, he says, "Ani Rothkopf, you recognize me?" I said, "Son of a gun, if I take your beard off and fix your two teeth there, you're the Gersh, Gershon Sadowski." The guy then rattles off my new book by heart, page by page by page. Nothing has changed. This is the way, when he went in for his Bechina, it's the famous story. Everyone from my year will tell the story. The Oral Bechina, Gersh walks in, we're all standing outside Dr. Belkin's office. Inside is Rabbi Belkin, the Rav, and Rabbi Moshe Shatzkis. The Gersh walks in. No, generally you walk in, we hear yelling afterwards, we hear fight, you know, the voices of the an hour and they ask your grandfather, an hour and 15 minutes. 2 minutes later, the Gersh walks out. Gersh, what happened? Back into the Beis Medrash, opens the Gemara, doesn't talk to anyone, back to learn, finished. We found out what happened. They shot a question at him. There are two versions. I'll give you the version I remember. He gave the Shachin Taz by heart, word by word. So the Rav said, no, I'm in Vestas to Ken Stalz. We know that you know everything. Gnug, threw him out. Another version is that he quoted a Taz, and Rav Moshe Shatzkis said, no, the Taz Zoktas nicht. And then Rav Gershon said, yeah, that's the Taz. They took down a Shulchan Aruch, and sure enough, Gershon was right. They threw him out. We don't have to ask any more questions. I think my version is correct, but the second one floats around too. Well, if you've studied from Washington to Washington, you know the story of how I come to the yeshiva. And I'm having this exam with the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, Rev Mendel Zaks, married to the Chafetz Chaim's daughter from his second wife. Read about the Chafetz Chaim's wife's story. His first wife was much older. She died. They made a shidduch with a younger woman, and she would only marry the Chafetz Chaim on condition she would have children from him. And she had a boy and a girl. This is the daughter, married to Rav Mendel Zaks, Radna Rosh Yeshiva. And I have a bechin, and I'm frightened stiff. You'll see why, and read Washington, study Washington. So we became good friends, and I was privileged that 10 years, 11 years to the day I sat before Rav Mendel, a frightened little sheep, that he came into my class in yeshiva, which would be next door to where I took the Bechina. Rai took the Bechina room 211, and I taught in room 212. I was a Rosh Yeshiva, room 212. Rav Mendel gave Bechinas to my students. So we became good friends. Then I went in Aliyah, and Rav Mendel followed. Lived in Matastov. I went to see him here. And then he died. Unfortunately, everyone grows older, and he passed on. So his wife, Friday night, woman has to hear Kiddush. Your generation, the women make Kiddush more than the men, right? I don't come from that generation. To me, to see a married woman making Kiddush, to me personally, it's offensive. You have to forgive me, but that's my Torah, that's my minhag that I saw, the way I lived, the rhythm I felt. A woman is a woman, a man is a man, and a man has to make Kiddush. There are times when a woman here in Israel, the husbands are in the army, miluim, okay. Then she makes Kiddush. So, Mata stuff doesn't lack yeshiva boys. Mata stuff was begun as a frum neighborhood. So every Friday night, a different yeshiva boy came in. Shiva Roy comes in, the Rebetzin, Chabka Kumin, Machin Kiddush Vach, I came in to make Kiddush for you. She gives him the kos. And this moron looks at the kos, says, Nishtar Shir, it's not big enough. And the Rebetzin says to him, this is the kos that the Chafetz Chaim made Kiddush on. Chaim doesn't have that story. I lived it. I don't know where Chaim was at the time. He probably was back in America taking care of his father. Not probably, he was. Jerusalem shook. That story spread like wildfire. What a story. But this is the reality. This is the reality. We have lost it. What Hitler did to us, what the secular Zionists, not all, but many, did to the Sephardic immigrants. You don't know what went on here. Read the memoir literature. Ben-Gurion and his cohorts were convinced religion is dead. Zionism is the greatest triumphant movement of the 20th century. There may be truth to that. But boy, it's amazing, in the 21st century, the whole Zionist movement has moved back to Torah. Look at this election. I can't believe what's going on. every party. He's looking for from people to put on their ticket. So I haven't heard one word against Torah Hashem, and I've been here for every election since 69. First election. Chok Tal? It hasn't even been mentioned. I'm afraid what's going to wind up is that the Supreme Court is going to decide. They have no right to decide because they were not elected. But the politicians are so frightened, so they take the hot potato and they throw it at the Supreme Court. And who would ever dream you'd have a Supreme Court today with quite a few Shomer Shabbos and quite a few Talmidei Chachamim on the Supreme Court, and it's only going to get better. What Hitler did to us. If not for the Shanghai crowd, where would I be? All right, I believe I'd be a Shomer Shabbos, I'd be a medical doctor. My brother's a medical doctor, he made his contribution, but I have different abilities. It's all cut, gone. The living tradition. Remember what I said about Reb Aaron Cutler? Remember what I wrote about Reb Aaron Cutler? Remember what I asked him in Lakewood? Shabbos, you wear a jacket. If you can't carry it, there's no Erev. Talking Lakewood, early 50s. Lakewood during the summer, hot as hell. Can you sling the jacket over your shoulder? Don't put your hands in the sleeve. It's not so oppressive. And remember Reb Aaron's answer? Didn't quote Mishnah Berurah, didn't quote a Taz, didn't quote a Magen Avraham, didn't quote a Ramah, simply said, we dressed like that in Slabodka during the summer. We also slung the jackets over our backs without our hands in the sleeves, and the altar of Slabodka and the Lubish Mordechai haben us nicht, haben sie nicht angemerkt. They didn't come to us that we were doing something wrong. That's an answer. That's minhag. That's the rhythm of Jewish life. That's going out and seeing Fukhazi Mayamadavar. That's Reb Aaron. And I believe that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, beginning on page 98, reaches an absolute crescendo of insight. It's unbelievable what he writes here, and it is so true. Coined a new word, by the way. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Mimetic tradition, to mimic. To mimic. I have discussed the disappearance of a way of life from the mimetic tradition. I believe, however, the transformations in the religious enclave, including the Haredi sector, go much deeper and affect fundamental beliefs. I can best convey my impression, and I emphasize that it's no more an impression, by sharing a personal experience. I'll read it to you in a minute, but let me summarize what he's about to say. It is so powerful, so insightful, sheer genius. You know, where did Chaim grow up? Boston. When the Rev came to Boston, I think Rakefit cites it in his two volumes on the Rav. The Rav said, and I quote, I paraphrase, when I came to Boston, you didn't find a Shomer Shabbos above the age of 13 and under the age of 70. There were three teenage kids who were Shomer Shabbos. That's all, in all of Boston. And the Rav said, and those three teenage kids who were Shomer Shabbos all became my brothers-in-law. Two married his sisters, and one married his wife's sister. I knew all three. Professor Lisman, his wife's sister. The Rav made the Shidduchim. Meiselman, Gerber. They were the only kids who were Shomer Shabbos. So you have all these balabatim. Many of them learned in their youth. Many of them went to yeshiva in their youth. Mechalalei Shabbos. People who had given up on their own kids. There's no future in America. Everything is lost. But Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, what a davening. What a pachat. What ein matadin, what fear, what devotion, what concentration. They still remember what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Teshuva, versus Given in the Alter Chaim. They still remember what it was like in Europe. And Reb Chaim says, today, have a whole new generation. Hundreds of thousands, I can say today, millions of Shomrei Shabbos. We have in the state of Israel alone 2 million Jews who qualify for the august title of Shomrei Shabbos. They are not Mechalu Shabbos, but Prehesia. At least 2 million. At least. You see the newspapers, interviews, not talking the religious press, the general press. A lady from the TV, in pants, she talks about Shabbos better than I can. And he says, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you can't even tell, Eimat Hadin, fear, pachad. They daven, they daven. They observe. They hear shofar. They fast. They wear sneakers. But what was in Europe is no more. The rhythm, the heartbeat is gone. In 1959, I came to Israel before the High Holidays, having grown up in Boston and never having had an opportunity to pray in a Haredi yeshiva. I spent the entire High Holiday period from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur at a famous yeshiva in Bnei Brak. For your edification, the yeshiva is Panovich. Okay? I lived. We were good friends. I know where he was. The prayer there was long, intense, and uplifting, certainly far more powerful than anything I had previously experienced. And yet, there was something missing, something that I had experienced before, something perhaps I had taken for granted. Upon reflection, I realized that there was introspection, self-ascent, even moments of self-transcendence, but there was no fear in the thronged student body, many of whom were Israeli born. Nor was that experience a solitary one. Over the subsequent 35 years, I have passed the High Holidays in the United States or Israel, occasionally in England, attending services in Haredi and non-Haredi communities alike. I have yet to find that fear present to any significant degree among the native-born in either circle. The 10-day period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are now holy days, but they are not Yomim Noraim, days of awe, or more accurately, days of dread, as they have been traditionally called. I grew up in a Jewishly non-observant community and prayed in a synagogue where most of the older congregants neither observed the Sabbath or even ate kosher. They all hurled from Eastern Europe, largely from Shtetlach, like Shtepekova and Schnippeschnuck. Most of their religious observance, however, had been washed away in the sea change, and the little left had further eroded in the new country. Indeed, the only time the synagogue was ever full was during the High Holy Days. Even then, the service was hardly edifying. Most didn't know what they were saying and bored, wandered in and out. Yet at the closing service of Yom Kippur, the Ne'ilah, the synagogue filled and a hush set in upon the crowd. The tension was palpable and tears were shed. What had been instilled in these people in their earliest childhood and which they could never quite shake off was that every person was judged on Yom Kippur, and as the sun was setting, the final decision was being rendered. Who for life? Who for death? Who for tranquility? And who for unrest? These people did not cry from religiosity, but from self-interest, from an instinctive fear for their lives. Their tears were courtroom tears, with whatever degree of sincerity such tears have. What was absent among the thronged students in B'nai Brak and in other contemporary services, and lest I be thought to be exempting myself from this assessment, absent in my own religious life, was the primal fear of divine judgment, simple and direct. End quote. I have to tell you, it's overwhelming. It is so insightful. It is so frightening, but so true. Look at the plethora of books that have come out. You take a few simonim in the Shulchan Aruch, Muktzer on Chol on Yontif. What you can do on Chol HaMoed. Aveilut. Mila, Pidyon HaBen. Endless books on how to have a kosher home. Shabbat. It's beyond words how much has been written. English. Libraries filled. Books on anything you can imagine that in the Shulchan Aruch are one or two simanim. And here it becomes major because we've lost the living tradition. We have to be taken by the nose, pulled by the ears, and guided at every little step. We didn't see it with our parents. We didn't see it with our friends. We didn't see it with our community. Wow. We have to rebuild from scratch. And I want to show you something extremely fascinating in Chaim's footnotes. Extremely fascinating what he caught here. I've learned these sources 1,000 times over. I've lectured on them 1,000 times over. And I never caught it. Reb Chaim caught it beautifully. One of the biggest problems we have today, we face that problem. It's an ongoing problem. I've given Shirim on it ad infinitum. I've published on it. I have a major piece in Rakafat Aaron that was published years ago, ahead of the crowd. Women and the study of Torah. Look what's happened. Women no longer get married at the age of 12. Women no longer get married at the age of 16. Women go to high school. Women go to college. Women go to graduate school. Women want to learn Torah. Women have the right to say. And the Rav has said it. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has said it. If we don't learn Torah today, we're going to university. We're learning every type of tiflit in the world. Why can't we learn Torah? All right. Can women study Torah? Now you just think, did your great-great-grandmother study Torah? Many of you are married to women who are 1,000 times more learned in Shas and Paiskim than her great-great-great-grandmother was. Right or wrong, it's a reality. My wife comes from generations. I told you, my wife's family reached America in 1870. She has great-great-grandparents buried in Queens, Mount Hebron. All our grandparents are buried there. All eight of our grandparents are buried in the same cemetery. But she has, wow. They were all from. They knew how to open a Gemara. Please. They knew how to daven. They knew Tzenu Verena, and that was it. And that was enough, and that was fine, and that was good. So on any lecture that you will hear or you will have to give on why we encourage women to study Shas and Poskim, I mean, Rakefet, for 31 years I taught them. I always told women, whatever you want to study, if you have five girls that want to have a certain course in a certain sefer, I will see to it that the school will make it available. And not Michla. Michla was not a boss. I was only a Rebbe. But Machon Gold, and afterwards in Dreshit Maria, I had influence beyond the classroom. No, who was the first one to permit it? The Chafetz Chaim. And that's, you look into Likutei Halacha, and the Sugya and Saita, begins on Daf Yud Tet, and afterwards Chaf Aleph, Chaf Bet. So the Chafetz Chaim says, it's a very famous Chafetz Chaim, a very famous footnote. It's probably the most famous lines that the Chafetz Chaim has written, because in modern times he's quoted and re-quoted. That times have changed. And he says, until now, women never left their home. Their mothers, their fathers taught them how to be good Jewish women. Now they go to gymnasium. Fiddler on the Roof. You all know what happened with Mr. Fiddler's daughters. And Shalom Aleichem's Fiddler on the Roof, Tevye the Milkman, is a reflection of life. It wasn't written in a dark room. It's a reflection of life. Now they go to gymnasium. If they don't learn Torah, they're really going to go off the path. And the Chafetz Chaim permits women to study. It opens the floodgate. Of course, he permitted Torah Shebichtav, permitted Halacha, Shulchan Aruch, but every 10 years, it was opened more and more. Beis Yaakov, the Belzer Rebbe gave a bracha. Who were the main teachers in Beis Yaakov? Beside the founder, Sarah Schneerer, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, she was a Belzer Hasida. The German Jews with PhDs, their wives, broadened the scope. The Rav, insistent that women must learn Gemara in modern times, insisted. Wouldn't allow women to have less of an education than a man. And it all goes back to the Chafetz Chaim. Fine. What do you see from the Chafetz Chaim? Black and white. Tradition is broken. The chain that began at Mount Sinai is severed. The father and mother are no longer giving the girl over to her husband. That world has collapsed. It is gone. But that's only part of what Reb Chaim tells us. That much I could have said too. But Reb Chaim does something ingenious, and I smack myself because I know the Sefer too, I've always quoted. Who is the last great Lithuanian posek? Shtat Rav, Posek Muvhak. No, Rabbi Chaim Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan. Haven't I given many shirim over the decades when there's a machlokes between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan? Who do you follow? Fascinating topic. A lot has been written on it. The Mishnah Berurah was a malakate. We'll come to that. The Aruch HaShulchan was a posek, was a Lithuanian Rav. He was born before Matan Torah. You know that expression, I trust. He was born before Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Briska ruined Psak in Lithuania. My Rebbeim were all Briskayim, were all the time. I'm not, Chas V'Chaila, don't misunderstand me. I'm not boasting, God forbid, who am I, what am I, I'm nothing about. But I can Paskin better than most of my Rebbeim. I can Paskin better. I can tell you, I don't mention names of Rebbeim, big Litvisher, Baruch Hashem reached America. I would ask a question back and forth. Who do you Paskin like? They would answer it. We don't know how to put. They don't know how. You know, dialectical tension. They see two sides. Okay, I understand it. Now I understand it. At the time, I was miffed. What do you mean you can't Paskin? You have to Paskin. Right? They're not Rabbonim. They're not Shtat Rav. So we learn them. They're Geit Hazeh, Mi Geit Hazeh. What can I tell you? Forgive my Yiddish, but that's my native Torah language. I had to break my teeth to learn it, but once you learn it, it's yours. I don't know how you can learn Torah if you don't know Yiddish. Without Yiddish, what did they teach me in Lakewood? Remember what I told you? Or told you over the decades? In Lakewood, they taught me that the Ribbono Shel Olam spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu in Yiddish. And the worst part is that I believe it in full today. That's the worst part. How do I explain that to Rav Avadja? Rav Avadja, my friend, Rav Avadja. All right, I have a problem explaining it to Rav Avadja. We'll let that problem hang fire. Aruch HaShulchan was some posek. Look in to the Aruch HaShulchan, Hilchot Talmud Torah, Siman Reish Mem Vav, Sif Katan Yud Tet. Okay, look in. Reish Mem Vav, Sif Katan Yud Tet. And remember, the Aruch HaShulchan was written a few years, not many, maybe a decade or less, before the Mishnah Berurah. But you see, where did the Chafetz Chaim live? No, tell me, Raten, right? Where was Raten? It was close to Vilna. The winds of modernity were blowing in the big cities. The winds of enlightenment, the winds of challenge to the Torah, the winds of assimilation, the winds of Toshav, not the Ger, as I explained. So Raten was affected. The Aruch HaShulchan was run in Nevada. Nevada, a little city, didn't have paved sidewalks yet. I visited Nevada in the 1890s. Take my word for it. I know what Nevada was like. There were no paved sidewalks. It was a bit of a ghetto. The outside winds had not yet penetrated. Look what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. And remember, I remember when what today is Chovev Torah began, my classmate Rabbi Saul Berman, when they were listing out what has to be done to modernize orthodoxy and get rid of the influence of some of the YU, Rashi, Yeshiva, etc. And they said we have to translate the Aruch HaShulchan into English. The Aruch HaShulchan is viewed as a liberal, he's a posek, a liberal. Rakefit said to his students then, hairs will grow on my palm before they translate the Aruch HaShulchan into English. I think I said that 20 years ago. I don't see any hairs on my palm, and I don't see an English translation of even the first volume of the Aruch HaShulchan. But he's a liberal? Amru Chachamim, he quotes the Gemara in Saita, call Hamalamei Torah to his daughter, ki ilmalamda tiflot, ki imloma devah vera, you're teaching your daughter how to sin. Vahatam debipnei shei daitan kalot motzim deber Torah lahavai lefi daitan adala. They don't have great intellectual ability. They will misuse their knowledge. He quotes the Gemara. He quotes the Psak in the Shulchan Aruch. And then he quotes the Ramah that you have to teach your daughters dinim hashayachim li'isha. Quotes the Ramah. That you have to teach your daughters, Moshe, you have to teach them Kashrut, Shabbat, Tarat Mishpacha, and I want you to know that the Aruch HaShulchan disagrees with the Ramah. and listen to these words, B'me'olam lona hagnu lamdam mitoch ha-seifa. V'lo shamanu ha-minhag. Whoever heard the Aruch HaShulchan says of teaching women from a text. We never heard of this minhag. We never heard of what the Rama is talking about. Ela hadinim hayuduim melamdenim melamedet kol isha lebita v'kalata. But the dinim that a woman has to know, the mother teaches her daughters, the mother teaches her daughters-in-law, v'shalom al Yisrael. Can you believe your ears? This is the Aruch HaShulchan. I want to see a translation of this in Chovevei Torah. I challenge Rabbi Saul Berman to translate this into English and put it up in Chovevei Torah. Ah, Ela hadinim hayaduam alamdek lepita v'kalata. V'zeh mikarov shenitpesu dinei hanashim v'lashim laz u'b'yecholton likro mechem. And he says, now people are talking, they've written, it's talking about Tarek Mishpacha, that booklets have been written about Tarek Mishpacha in the secular language, and women know how to read it? I don't like that. I don't believe it. We can depend upon our women. V'nashim shalanu zrizot. Our women are very careful, very, what would be the zrizot, very pedantic, very anxious to observe the Torah. U'b'chol davar sofek shalot. They ask their parents, they ask their mother, v'einan mamidot al daiton, and they never depend upon their own knowledge. Afilu b'davar hakatan shebekatnud. Even the smallest matter that comes up, they will not depend upon themselves, they will ask their mother. And if the Aruch HaShulchan could have his way, he is posek lahalacha, don't you teach the women anything. Do not open up a text. Gentlemen, the Aruch HaShulchan was absolutely right. Before modern times, that's the way people lived. You could depend upon the minhag. You could depend upon the mother and the daughter relationship. Even the mother and the daughter-in-law relationship. Wow, that is fabulous. The Chafetz Chaim already saw the changes. Rupture and reconstruction. What a footnote. What insight of my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, whom I understand the boys in yeshiva call Dr. Grach. Shalom, something or not. Wow. Let me end off. There's another footnote, beginning on page 111. Today, Abba's son-in-law. By the way, last night I believe I met my next granddaughter-in-law-to-be. So I had a big night last night. I had a very busy weekend, Kanayin Hara, with grandchildren. Friday, Shabbos, Motzai Shabbos. Baruch Hashem. She went to Lindenbaum, the Israeli division. So I think she's learned a lot of textbooks. She's come a long way from the Aruch HaShulchan's position. But Baruch Hashem, the Kavod u'Tiferet. Have a son-in-law. My son-in-law lives Minhag HaGra. The minute I got involved with that whole problem with Simchas Torah and Decree, I called Reb Chaim and I said, Chaim, do you lay in the Simchas Torah night or don't you lay in? All the shuls don't lay in. How can you not lay in? Look into the Maaser Rav. You follow the Gra. And you all know that modern times, Minhag HaGra, Sidurim have come out. Volumes have come out. Endless discussions. How many matzah do you take? Leil HaSeder. Moshe, how many do you take?
Three.
You're a sheikitz. How do you take three? Lechem Mishnah. One, lechem only has to be from the lechem Mishnah. You take two, the Gaon's right. What can I do? I also take three. Yeah, minhag hagra, right? So it's endless. I can show you minhag hagra. I mean, for instance, Rosh Chodesh. Do you wear a white shirt? David, you're wearing a white shirt today. Is that a Beitar scarf? Yeah. Same colors. I see you're an Israeli. Baruch Hashem. Whenever I mention the Yankees to my grandsons, they tell me Beitar Yerushalayim. All right. Azeful Kenich, that much I already know. Beitar Yerushalayim. Soccer, sports is ingrained. It's like a candy bar. If you grew up in Hershey's is sweet. Took me a long time to appreciate elite. You follow me? The Yankees are the Yankees. You can't shake it out of you. You understand? Every morning I look at the Yankee website, Ruskate done with these idiots. Okay. And it hurts me. Rodriguez has the same AR, both of us. Tell me, have I given a bad share? I don't say I'm a share, I'm a fabulous, but they're good. Some are fabulous. Luke, has he had one fabulous game this past year? Later, what the heck is he making? $29 million a year. What am I making? Boy, I'm lucky if it's $29. All right, maybe a little more. Sigma, gentlemen, the Gra. Who ever heard of Minhag HaGra before modern times? The only place, Chaim says, and he has traditions from his father, his grandfather, the only place where they followed Minhag HaGra, and even there not entirely, was in the Gra Shtibel in Vilna. When I came into the one surviving shul in Vilna, 1989, I saw on the wall a list of what Tehillim to say, Shir Shalom, Sukkot, and on Pesach, Minhag HaGra. Who else follows Minhag HaGra? You look into the Mishnah Berurah. Chaim gives a source, I checked it out, where the Mishnah Berurah himself dismisses Minhag HaGra. Look in Hilchat Tisha B'Av, in the sixth volume, page Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, 51, in the Roman numeration, look into the Bia Halacha, you'll see there that he comes out against the Gra. So Chaim makes the point ingeniously. Kol Zman, there was a living tradition, no one paid attention to the Gra. All right, he had his viewpoints. Once the living tradition is abolished and people are searching and seeking the printed word, thousands of sheets have been written in modern times on Minhag HaGra. It's like every Litvish Ben Torah who wants to achieve something unique has suddenly become a devotee of the Vilna Shtibel where the Gaon davened. And this is Chaim, I say again, a genius of geniuses. Rupture and reconstruction is an unbelievable, insightful work. And here you see Reb Chaim coming back to what Reb Aaron Soloveitchik told me, exactly like his father. Whatever he touches is filled with chiddush. Halacha l'maisa, we are still neviim, b'nei neviim. We still have Ruach HaKodesh. We still are a fabulous people who bounce back from the ashes of Auschwitz to create a magnificent Torah existence which intensifies daily. We have a lot to be proud of. Can we follow every minhag on the street today? Can we say Fukhazi? To a certain degree, yes. With all that has happened, there is continuity. That Reb Chaim is absolutely right. The fear of Yomim Noraim we do not have. We have to try our best. Some way, somehow, we will reestablish it. But Torah is given to human beings. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. And this is Yahadut. And this is why a Rebbe is invaluable. I always have told my colleagues, my friends, many of them were in the rabbinate, the older they grew, the Balabatim very indecorously let them know it's time to retire. They need a young rabbi. He's more active. He has more energy. He can deal with the youth. A Rebbe, the older he gets, the more valuable he gets, because he is the link to yesteryear. And when you have a Rebbe that just saw the tzaddikim, the chassidim of yesteryear, the skenim, he is the plate of sofreihim. And that's the pfuk chazi, and that's im lo neviim hem b'nei neviim. Even though Reb Chaim puts us in a cautious state, we are after a break, but we are reconstructing. So what did we do today? Okay, what did we do today? The Magen Avot of the Meiri, my student Dr. Blau, the Nachlat Shiva, and the heart of the Shir, with many side issues, rupture and reconstruction, the Yerach HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah, that's overwhelming to me. The Gra, new eminence, once there is a rupture. Very, very fascinating. Tomorrow Shir, I would not miss for all the money that is stockpiled on Wall Street under lock and key, although it's a little less than it was before the flood and the election, but still, there's plenty there. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm going to start the class by telling you the miracle that we uncovered as a result of last week's shir. Come to class ready to rejoice and drink a l'chaim, and then we go into the start of one of the most painful sagas ever, the story of Rabbi Jacob Joseph. Tomorrow shir is the last shir for 3 weeks. Then it's Hanukkah. Sunday Hanukkah, there's no shir, there's candle lighting. Monday there is shir. I spoke with Rabbi Benna, she explained to me how it works. Wednesday and Thursday you have off. And Sunday, the last day of Hanukkah, there's no candle lighting, so there is shir. There's regular yeshiva, so that the week I come back for, only Monday there is shir. The week afterwards, we're back to normal. Sunday and Monday, Be'ezrat Hanotein La'yo'ov Koach. This is for Yitz Rubin. Michael, I make you a shliach l'dva mitzvah. He'll be here tomorrow morning? Okay, so we can keep it. Does anyone want, this is a sample, what Steinsaltz began has been emulated 4 or 5 different ways. This is the Shas Lublin, Bracha Daf Yud Aleph Techafav. It's just amazing what you have here. You don't have to open up another sefer. It summarizes Rishonim, Achronim, whatever you want. Some of the recent, I don't know why, but they've come out once again against shaitels. If anyone has a wife who wears a shaitel and you want her to wear a tichel, not a shaitel, just show her what all these gedolim have to say about shaitels. Also, it deals with the rupture and reconstruction. Rabbi Yashiv says that a shaitel of 100 years ago, that was fine. But the way they wear Hollywood shaitels today, chas v'chalila. Here's a very fascinating article. I believe I'm pronouncing it right. The Kalev Rebbe of Williamsburg gave a shir in YU. And this is both a summer, it shows him teaching the YU guys, and then you get the comments, and half of them are off the wall, and they talk about what they don't know, and no one picks up a phone to Rakefet. There's the facts. I think I did a doctorate on the history of Yeshiva Bernard Rebbe. You see from the comments. Whoever,
year.
What?
Every year he goes to YU.
Terrific. And this is a New York Times article that appeared yesterday on the Christian right and how we've lost every battle. Homosexual marriages, Obama is laughing all the way to the bank. This is on Russia, Putin and Rabbi Lazar, word by word, their conversation. It is fabulous. And again, I repeat what the Tefid has said 1,000 times over, Putin is a Chabadnik. The reason why is not here, because he doesn't say it publicly. Chabad has brought billions of dollars into the economy, and the men, the giants of the business world to invest, don't want anything, not interfering with Russia, just let Chabad thrive. Putin is a Chabadnik, the happiest guy in the world. Do me a favor, this I'll give tomorrow, because you guys are not Chabadnikim, but this will be very valuable for your son. It deals with the Rebbe, pictures of the Rebbe with Shazar, when Shazar visited the Rebbe, president of Israel. This, if anyone wants, this will give Rabbi Rubin heart failure. There are reasons why I had to go to my archives and check things. This is the original letter of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in his handwriting, that it's better to die at the hands of the Nazis than to be spiritually defiled by what is today Yeshiva University. It is right here, and I'm going to Chicago now. It's both YU and Skokie are put in the same camp. So if anyone wants a copy, because I quoted in silver. So people said, where did you see that letter? And here's written out by someone against YU to give a shtek. But here's the original.
Does he name
white? Yeah, of course, black and white. Here, tell me, Jim. Yeshiva Dr. Revel, okay? In New York. No, what does he mean, Moshe? Yeshiva Dr. Revel. But here, in the transliteration, they write Hamuchune Yeshiva University. Whoever wants can have. What?
Yes,
take whatever you want. You want here? Yeah. Oh, you want this? Okay. This to say tomorrow. Okay.